Aloha, Rick Sengaria, Vermont Edition. This podcast has been edited for brevity, so enjoy. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's that time of year again, on the cusp of sugaring season, when the ups and downs of the mercury and the lengthening of the days spur our maple trees into action, and spur us into action, too. Today, we're going to listen back to a show we did last February, looking at the joys of sugaring. It's big business, of course, but it's also relatively easy for anyone with a few maple trees to do. In our show, we focused on the hobby maple syrup maker and the fun we can have with an at-home sugaring setup. But really, everything you need to know about sugaring can be explained by Sydney Reed of Heartland. We started last year's show by listening back to the now classic piece of Sydney and her dad, Rick, back in 2011, explaining how to tap your maple trees.
Good. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 buckets. These are the lids. Some are flat and some are like peaks, like a house, like roof of a house. These are our Dad, what are these?
Spiles.
Spiles.
That's right.
You tap them into the tree and sap comes out of them. Want me to get the door, Dad?
Sure.
What are we doing this year?
We're going to do 3 trees, Sid. We're not going to do the smallest one on the right there. We're going to go off to the left and do that other one. Let's go right to the big one, Pip. Here's a trick, Sid. To get the most sap, the sap comes up when the tree warms up. And so what you want to do is to be on the south side of the tree. So which is... That's right. Where is the sun? Where's the south side of the tree?
South side.
South side. Sounds good.
I think we should put it right there.
All right. Now, here's what we do. We drill in about 2 inches with this drill, okay, which is right to there.
Okay.
You want the sap to drip out. So as you drill, you want it to be down like this, so it's angled down a little bit.
Okay.
And let her go. That's right. And pull out the chips. There we go. Put in there.
Okay. Oh, I can already see it going.
Yes, there it goes.
Wow.
Amazing.
We better get those buckets out before it runs out all. Okay. I love the sound of the tapping noise.
Mm-hmm. Listen to how fast it's running.
I think it's going to be a good year this year. Sounds like it is.
That was Sydney Reed at age eight, in 2011, and her father, Rick, starting us with a tapping primer. So let's pick it up from there, although nobody can beat Sydney. And I'm joined by George Cook, retired UVM Extension maple specialist. Hi, George.
Good morning.
How you were you? Loving hearing Sydney, too. I could see
you smiling. Oh, my gosh. She's wonderful.
So you have run workshops helping people get started on sugaring. And, you know, if you don't have a dad who can help you out, you maybe have George Cook who can help you out. But I understand that one of the things that you have to start with is asking people if they can actually identify a maple tree.
Well, you know, we have a lot of folks that are very interested in sugaring, and they are new to it. And sometimes that is a very basic question is, how do I know which is the maple tree? And so I encourage people, you know, think ahead, you know,
right,
6 months.
Right, because this is not the right time to try to ID a maple tree the most easy way you
could
do
correct.
It.
That's correct. That's correct. Is, you know, go out during the summer, during the fall with somebody that does know maple trees, walk through your woods or your backyard and have somebody point out which ones are the maple trees and how to identify that with the leaves or the twigs and the bark. Because this time of year, during the spring, when we're actually tapping, the only thing we really have that's easy is the bark.
All right. So give us some tips on how to identify maple bark right now. And well, there are different kinds of maples, too.
Yes.
There are red maples and sugar maples. And
yes. And the sugar maple is the most common. It's the preferred one. And they tend to be a dark gray bark. They're coarsely corrugated, you might say, like corduroys you would wear, only these are much larger and much broader, and they go all the way around the tree as it gets older. Now, a younger tree has smoother bark, but as it gets older, it develops these ridges and valleys around the tree and the bark, and that's pretty characteristic of the maple.
How big around should a maple tree be before you start tapping it?
Excellent question. We recommend that people wait until a tree is 10 to 12 inches across, that's diameter, at about chest high, 4.5 feet off the ground. And so that's good for one tap. And we've seen these big old trees with several buckets on them, and our recommendation to commercial producers is to limit the number of buckets or taps you put onto a tree. Let's not take it all.
Right. Let's not suck that tree dry.
We want these trees to be around for the next generation and the generation beyond that, and good, sensible tapping will ensure that.
How high up should you be tapping?
You know, that varies. If you're using buckets, it's usually right around waist high. And the reason it's usually waist high is because in the old days we used a carpenter's bit and brace, and you put the head of the bit stock against your belt, and you ground it into the tree.
Ah, now, I didn't realize that was the reasoning.
Well, pretty much. So if you had a high snowbank, they might be higher, and you don't want to tap too high, because then when the snow's gone, you're reaching for the sap bucket. But with the onset of cordless drills, that allows us to reach higher, and also there are people that will use tubing, and even small producers with a few can use tubing, and that allows you to reach higher.
Yeah, some of the trails I walk on have the tubing, you know, the tree is tapped 8 feet up, so you can walk underneath the tubes rather than, you know, getting your neck caught every time
right.
you walk.
Right, and if you get a 2-foot snowstorm, which occasionally we do, you don't want them to be buried either.
And we got a question from Kathy in East Montpelier, who says, "We've just had a day of high 60s temperatures, and I'm wondering how many hours of warm temperatures does it take to make the sap start flowing in maple trees? A few hours? A few days? In other words, does one extraordinarily warm 24 hours followed by a more or less conventionally cold winter screw things up really badly? So what is the deal?"
Well, I have trees that are facing the southwest. I also have trees that are facing the north. And I just made the very first syrup yesterday. And
you brought it in. It's beautiful.
Yeah. The trees on the southwest side actually are warmer because they get the warm afternoon sun. Those on the north side, they still got their winter coats on. So yesterday's warm weather really, I think, benefited us in that it helped to warm those trees. We've got to have to remember, we've come out of a winter where we had 2 or 3 weeks of just plain frigid weather. And those trees are frozen. They're cold. So it's going to take a while to warm up. So I wouldn't worry about that warm day we had yesterday.
So one warm day won't screw things up. But if suddenly we went into consistent 60-degree or 50-degree temperature and above freezing at night, too, that would be pretty bad for our
sugar. That's the kiss of death.
Yeah.
Because the trees get too warm, and then that is not conducive to good sap flow, and it's not good for a good quality sap.
It makes sense that the trees need to warm up, that sap needs to start flowing again, so it's got to be fairly warm. But explain why we need that below, ideally below freezing evenings and then warming up during the day to make the sap really run.
Sure. In simple terms, at night it gets cold below freezing. That creates kind of a negative pressure inside of the tree. What's the tree do to fill that negative pressure? It draws sap up through the root system, fills that void. And then the next day, it warms up, hopefully, and the pressure goes from negative to positive inside the tree. Just as if you spring a helium balloon inside where it's warmer, it gets real taut. And so if we've drilled a hole in the side of the tree, that sap is going to find its way to the weakest point, and that's why it'll flow during the warm day.
Let's go to Helen, who's calling in from Westminster West. Hi, Helen. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was just wondering how many taps are too many to have in a tree. We have a very old maple that we sometimes put 3 taps in. I'm wondering if that's okay for the tree.
Helen, if you were trying to hug the tree, how big is it?
It's big. It's, you know, it's have two or three people, depending on how big they were, to hug it. It's probably, you know, 150-year-old maple.
George, what do you think?
Wow. Our general recommendation is limit to two taps. But those big old trees, if it's healthy, not a lot of dieback in the top, you're talking about a huge tree. You're probably not going to hurt it with three. But I wouldn't go more than that. I have seen pictures of days past with, you know, four and five and six buckets
ringing
around
the
tree. And that's not a good, healthy way of tapping.
Okay. Well, Helen, it sounds like does maybe three taps on that tree, so it sounds like it's probably okay.
Yes. By the way she's describing it, if it takes two or three people, hugging around that tree to reach fingertips, you're probably okay.
Boy, and I'm jealous of that tree, too. That sounds
oh, yes.
beautiful. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about tapping, and we can talk more if people have questions. But what about the actual equipment you need? Because there are lots of different types of equipment. I mean, you can even use milk jugs if you don't want to buy a sap bucket. So, like, what does actually somebody need to have to tap their trees?
Well, first, you need a way of tapping it, which is a drill. A 5/16 drill is the most common size today, either a cordless drill or a carpenter's bit and brace. You need some sort of bucket or container to collect the sap in. You need the sap spouts. Some call them spiles. Some call them spouts. That's all the same item. And so you drill the hole, you tap the spout in, hang the bucket on it, and put the cover on it.
And the spouts can look very different. The spiles can look very different these days. I mean, I'm accustomed to the metal ones, but you see plastic ones now that don't look the same at all.
That's right. That's right. They do make plastic spouts to hang buckets on. And if you're using tubing, then that's a totally different looking plastic spout. So that basically is going to get the sap to where we can collect it. And then you need and let me just preface, everything that you're using needs to be a food grade material. It has to have had food in it or be made for food. We're making food, so
right.
We want to make sure that's there. So then you have a pail or two to gather the sap. You walk from tree to tree and collect your daily gathering, and then take it to wherever you're going to be boiling. Excuse me, boiling it down. And there's a wide variety of things that people use there for boiling.
Yeah, and this is an exciting part, too, because there is new technology, and we're going to talk in just a moment to an entrepreneur who's got some great new technology for home boiling. I want to ask you, though, in terms of storing, I remember hearing that you don't want to – you can store the sap. It's fine, but you don't want to store it in a really warm place. So what do you do if you're having 50-degree days? How do you have to, like, find a refrigerated place or, you know, a root cellar to store all of your sap until you're ready to boil?
My sugar house has its storage on the north side of the sugar house.
And that's good enough.
The north side is going to be in the shade pretty much all day. And anything you can do, including wrapping the storage container with a couple layers of tarp or whatnot, that'll help keep it cold. And the basic thing is, too, when we're collecting sap, in order to make a good quality syrup, you want to process it. You want to boil it down to syrup as soon as possible.
So you can do it in many, many, many batches if you want.
Yes.
Although it's a time-consuming thing to boil, so perhaps you don't want to do, you know, every quart that you've got and boil it down.
Right. Usually people will collect sap until they get a certain amount that they can process, and it's going to take – the ratios are about 40 to 1. 40 gallons to make 1 gallon of syrup or 40 quarts to make 1 quart of syrup. So I think that's a truth that people in the beginning need to accept, that it takes a lot of time, a lot of fuel, and a lot of patience for that sap to boil down to a little bit of syrup.
Yeah. Let's talk boiling now, because I am a terrible tapper. So I rarely have much of anything to boil, and I'm not doing anything this year because I didn't get my act together. So I just do it on my stovetop, mm-hmm. and I don't mind sitting there and watching, and I'm not going to have, you know, sap steam that's coating my walls. Because, I mean, really, it's like the last time I did it, I had, I think, maybe 5 tablespoons of maple syrup, and I treat it like gold. But most people don't recommend boiling in their kitchen stove, and we have a story about that. Tim wrote in and said, gave us a story on Facebook, and you can read the whole story from Tim, which is very entertaining on our Facebook page. But Tim writes, Last spring, I was boiling maple sap into maple syrup on the kitchen stove. Yeah, I know, Vermonters already hear the alarm bells. It's not that you can't boil on the stovetop. It's more that it's a pretty dumb idea. You have to be really present to pull it off, which is a problem because it takes a stupid long time to produce useful amounts of maple syrup, which means you're often not present. So I turned the kitchen into a maple production facility, 4 burners on full boil. It means we can't cook anything else on the stove. The kids don't get to eat. The wallpaper threatened to fall off the wall with all the moisture in the air. I'm sticky with sap, sick of boiling, sick of the kitchen. I looked down just in time to see my well-loved flannel shirt catch fire by the flannel fur I had just dangled through the gas flame on the stove. I beat at the flame on my chest, but it spread up the pills and the fur on my shirt with astonishing speed. I'm embarrassed to admit that unmanly sounds escaped my lips. Tim writes, I'm still alive, slightly traumatized, maybe a little bit wiser. And Chris in Cornwall says, what is the best way to boil sap for a small backyard producer? I tried my propane grill last year, but it used a ton of propane and took forever. I've seen websites about building your own outdoor stove, but I'm not super handy, though I've considered this option. And Chris is wondering about any suggestions. So on that note, let's turn to Kate McCabe. Kate is CEO of the Vermont Evaporator Company, and I think she might have a solution for Chris in Cornwall. Hi, Kate. Nice to talk
with you. Hi, Jane. Hi, George. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Kate.
I do have a solution for Chris.
Good. Go right ahead.
So my husband and I own and operate Vermont Evaporator Company, and we specialize in manufacturing and selling rigs for backyard sugar makers. And we have a flagship model that's called the Sapling, which is a barrel evaporator. So it's a wood-fired model made out of a 55-gallon drum that we turn on its side and modify into a backyard arch. We also have products for folks that have a different firebox in mind. So we sell baffled food-grade stainless pans to people who, for example, do a cinder block campfire method, or for people like Chris who have a propane grill but are sort of not patient enough to do the flat pan method on the grill. We have a special pan that people can put on their grills to make it go faster and take less propane.
So, Kate, you and your husband, Justin, started up this process, I understand it, because you were trying to figure out how to do this yourselves.
That's correct. We moved into a new house about 4 years ago and realized pretty quickly that we had a nice maple stand and we wanted to try it ourselves. We, like so many others, started on our propane grill, spent too much money on propane, and ended up with not very much syrup after a lot of labor. So my husband's a handy guy, and he spent about a year tinkering in the garage, and then we came out with our Sapling, and we have been in business ever since.
How did you know you were onto something that other people were going to be eager for?
Well, we didn't really intend to create a business from the get-go, but my husband, in addition to being handy, is frugal. And so instead of buying, one set of everything, he bought a dozen sets of everything so that we could sell 11 and sort of get our evaporator for free. And with very little marketing, I think we had 2 Craigslist postings, we were able to sell those 11 units in about 10 days. And so then we decided, we weren't the only ones out there looking for a product that was versatile. Our Sapling turns into a grill in the off season or a smoker, portable and meant to be used outside. So, a product that doesn't require you to invest in a sugar shack. So we found that there were a lot of us out there.
Yeah, I love that your equipment is kind of like a transformer. You know, it can be used for boiling, or then it can be a pizza oven. Then it can be a smoker. It's sort of like anything you want it to be. So, you've started this company and it's amazing to me. I was driving to work a few weeks ago and saw a Vermont evaporator truck. It was remarkable to see that. I've never seen maple equipment being taken on a truck around my neighborhood. So it sounds like you are onto something. So far, so good?
Yeah, so far, so good. Yep. We've sold as far west as Wisconsin, as far south as Kentucky, obviously all over New England, couple of sales in Canada, all through the Midwest. So this is not just big in Vermont. It's big in, there are 20 states in the union, actually, that have an active backyard mapling community.
So just to get to Chris's question about how not to use so much propane, do you have advice for him? You know, whatever he's using, is there any way to use less fuel?
Well, that's why we came out with this particular product. We call it the Seedling Urban Evaporator, and it is a baffled stainless can that allows you to use what's called continuous boil on your propane grill. So most people, when they start out, they use a flat pan, just a stainless pan, you know, that might look like a pan you make lasagna in, and they put it on their grill or they put it over a fire, and that will work. But it will work faster if you have a baffled pan, a pan that is basically designed to act like a channel, a very long channel sort of squished over your firebox. You flood the pan with sap, you start your boil, and then you put in your sap at one point and boil continuously. So you never kill your boil, and you're able to replace the volume loss with new sap, and it makes the whole thing more efficient. I bet George is better at explaining this than I am.
You've done very well, Kate. Very well.
Thank you.
Well, Kate McCabe, I'm so glad that you were on the show and excited to hear about the success of your company, CEO of Vermont Evaporator Company. Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And Jane, it's not too late to start this year. So if you need a product, you can go to vtevap.com.
Thank you, Kate. That's awesome. I think there are probably people who need it more than I do. Honestly, the last time I tapped my backyard trees, I came up with a couple. It was going to be like, I don't know, half a cup. And then my baby cried at the wrong moment, and I came back and it was sugar. And oh my God, I was so upset about it. But there are people who probably need an actual flat pan, and I appreciate that. And I should mention, Vermont Evaporator Company is a VPR underwriter. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition. Today, we're listening back to a show we did last February about backyard sugaring and all the tips and tricks for turning sap into syrup. Let's return to that discussion with retired maple specialist George Cook, formerly with UVM Extension. We have a note from Corey in Richmond who says, "We started tapping some trees years ago when the kids were small and boiled in a pan outside. That grew to more buckets each year and a small sugar house, producing about 50 gallons a year, to now a larger sugar house, pipeline, vacuum system, and producing about 300 gallons a year. It's still just our small family and a few friends, and our three children have always had something to do during mud season. We enjoy sharing our love of sugaring with visitors." George, is there a point at which somebody goes from a hobbyist sugarer or a backyard sugarer to, I guess, what we would have to call a professional?
This is not a strange story at all. Many, many, many people started just the way she describes. And I would say that's the way I started, helping my dad and grandfather. And when we bought our place, one prerequisite was had to have maple trees on it. At what point do you become, more commercial? That varies a good deal.
I'm almost there, though, clearly, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've told people for years, I said, don't dabble with sugaring unless you're ready to make a lifelong commitment, because once that bug bites you, you're bit for life.
Why do you think that is? I mean, why do people like it so much? I know it's expensive, but it's expensive to make it too. I mean, when you talk about like hearing Chris for how much propane they're using, so why do people like making it so much?
It's just so much fun, and the fact that when you get done, no matter how much or how little maple syrup you've got, you made it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that personal pride, and you hold that up and it glistens in the sunshine. It's like, wow, look what I did.
I know. It's so beautiful.
And it's so delicious.
Yeah, it is so delicious. Will says, "I moved to upstate New York from Arizona, and after a few years here, I realized we had quite a few maple trees. We started tapping a few trees and making our own syrup and fell in love. I have also planted black walnuts over the years and found that you can tap them as well to produce a great syrup. We use our old turkey roaster set up on the front porch with a card table over the top to protect from rain and snow. It stays on high all day, and it boils down nicely." So, I mean, George, there are a lot of ways that people make their own setup.
Any number of ways that basically you need to find a way that you can boil water away from the sap. And as many people out there as there are, Yankee ingenuity, they're going to find ways of evaporating that sap and end up with syrup.
So for boiling, if you're starting, say, with you know, with a certain volume of sap, can you keep adding sap to it all day long and keep boiling that down? Or do you need to start with what you got and let that all boil down, then start with a new batch?
No, you keep adding to it. If you started with just a pan of sap, you would end up with such little syrup it would be burning in the bottom. So, yes, you keep adding this sap to it throughout the day. When it is reaching that time that you say, I'd really like to call it a day, then most likely you're going to stop adding sap to it. What you have is going to continue to evaporate, getting more concentrated to the point that you get syrup. And for some of us, that may get to be a small enough container that we're going to pour it into a saucepan, a large saucepan, take it in the house, put it on the stove, and finish it off in the house. And that's okay. I would run the fan. But at that point, it's getting fairly concentrated. You have syrup when it's boiling about 7.5 degrees hotter than water. So if your thermometer says water's boiling at 212, add 7.5 degrees. You get up to 219.5, and you're pretty close to syrup, and you're done.
There's also the spoon method. Tell us about the spoon method. This is what I've used and probably why I've failed. But you check the spoon, and when it sort of starts to slide off, then you're getting close.
Yeah, it's what we call aproning. And you can use a spoon or a spatula. As it becomes syrup, it gets thicker, and that drip of syrup becomes wider and wider, and it becomes more of a like an apron dangling off the bottom of the spoon or the spatula or whatever you're using. And that's when you can then start to determine, okay, it's syrup. For many people, they don't cook it quite enough. It may still be thin, but there comes a point where it's getting shallow enough in the pan and you're worried about scorching it, and you say, we're done.
How do you know? I mean, if you don't have a thermometer, you know, because it's warm, so it's you know, going to be a little bit looser when it's hot, nice and hot, than it is when it actually cools down. But, you know, how do you pick that exact moment? Because it's one of those sort of fine art, exact science melds where you think, now, no. Oh, shoot, I missed it.
A little bit of trial and error. You know, watch how it comes off that spoon, and then after you're done, let it cool down. If you realize it's a little bit thin, it's not as thick as I would like to see it, then take it just a little bit further. And the way it drips off that spoon, you watch it, and it will it'll get more of a consistently wide drop of syrup. And it's, as I say, trial and error, and what do the results taste like?
Yes, which is the all-important
stuff. And if it's for home use, if it's a little thin, okay, so what?
Yeah.
Next time we'll make it a little thicker.
Let's get another voice in here as well from Jacob Walker. Jacob is a Vermont Technical College student and a backyard sugarer and a maple ambassador. Jacob, it's nice to have you on the program.
Hi.
So what is a maple ambassador? This is an official title, not something that you made up or we made up. You are an official maple ambassador.
Yeah, I am. It's a competition in the spring, and it represents basically we represent Vermont maple. We're the envoy of maple for Vermont, which is really exciting and an honor.
And you know George Cook, I should say. I found out in our break, you and George go way back.
Yes, we do. My mom used to work with him for a UVM extension, and I have been to his sugar house multiple times, and I definitely enjoy talking to him, and he is all around a maple expert.
Well, it sounds you're on your way too, Jacob. What do you like about sugaring? What is it? I mean, George said once you get that bug, you never stop. So what is it for you?
It's definitely a bug. I have grown up sugaring for as long as I can remember. I remember my dad used to have an old little hut. We used to go out with a pot and boil it down a flat top. And it's the family aspect, being around family, being able to work in the woods, and it's just something that once you start, it grows and grows and grows.
How many trees do you tap now?
We started with, you know, a couple trees. We had buckets, Now we're to the point where we've added pipeline, and we have 300-400 taps we tapped right now.
And how much syrup do you make each year?
Last year, we made close to 200 gallons.
So 200 gallons is probably too much to give away to your friends and family. You sell it?
Yes, we do sell it.
So for people who are thinking about this or starting to dabble or, you know, just looking around at their land and thinking, oh, I could be using these maple trees, how would you convince someone to get started? Why is it worth it?
Well, I'd say it's an awesome experience, and it's something that you've got to try. If you're going to live in Vermont, you've got to try it. It's worth the time. It's very enjoyable, and once you try it once, it's yours. You've made the syrup, and as George said earlier, it's something that, you know, once you've done it, it's yours. You can say, I made this.
You know, the other thing, Jacob, and I'd love your take on this, that I've found as someone who did not grow up sugaring, is that there so many sugar makers are so warm and welcoming to people who want to come and see what it's all about. And they'll often open up their sugar house beyond just Maple Open House Weekend to let people come in and see how it works, you know, sit around and have some coffee with some syrup in it and really learn the way that it's done from them. And it sounds like, you know, for friends and family, for you, it's been that way, too, of this community event.
Definitely. I think our motto here is if you can see steam from the road, you're more than welcome to come in. And I know there's definitely sugar makers out there that have their door open when they're boiling. And I know this open house weekend, that's a huge draw for people to come up and visit. But yeah, definitely if you're looking for the experience to go, there's definitely places to go and check out the maple industry in Vermont.
Well, Jacob, I hope this is a great season for you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, no problem.
Jacob Walker is a student at Vermont Technical College. He's a backyard sugarer, kind of more than a backyard sugarer at this point, and a maple ambassador. We've got a couple minutes left with George Cook. We got a note from Laurel who says, I let my sap freeze as part of my process to concentrate it. I save the ice to drink, and the remaining sap is much more concentrated. I'm able to remove at least 75% of the water this way and get a subtly flavored hot drink. I heat to sterilize as a byproduct. And while we're talking about what to do with your sap and your syrup, let's go to Eric in Colchester. Hi, Eric. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. My name is Eric. And what was just said about if you're going to live in Vermont, you might as well try this. And I'd recently moved to Vermont. My question was about making maple beer. I have noticed one recipe that you would use 2 gallons of fresh maple sap, and another recipe you could actually use the syrup to make beer. And I was just a general question. I wanted to point it out because I hadn't heard anything yet about that.
Eric, thanks for the call. What do you think, George? Maple beer.
Oh, I have sampled various people's recipes, you know, the recipe, and you can make it out of either. I've never made it myself, so I'm no expert on making maple beer. But if you know someone that does, they're usually fairly open to, you know, kind of sharing some ideas.
What other ideas do you have for what to do with your syrup other than, you know, just glug it right out of the container?
Oh, maple can be used in almost any recipe where you would want a sweetener. I tell people there isn't anything you can't make better with maple syrup.
How did you even get started?
How did I?
Get started.
I grew up on a small dairy farm, and my dad and grandfather had about, 300-400 taps up on the hill. And I would live for the day that I could get home from school off the bus and run up on the hill and get there before they fired for the last time.
Well, George, I really appreciate you sharing your enthusiasm and your expertise with us. What fun.
Oh, it is so much fun. So if you're interested, folks, do it.
Yeah, and as Jacob said, if you can see the smoke rising, go ahead and see if the door is open.
Absolutely. It gets to be a long day with no visitors, so stop in.
That was George Cook, a retired maple specialist at UVM Extension. We spoke with him last year to share the joys of backyard sugaring.